I'd like to start by apologizing for Viviana Grzycewicz's absence today. Viviana, as some of you know, is the executive director of CEHIL, and she could not be here for personal reasons. Secondly, I wanted to thank the organizers for inviting us to participate in this interesting event. I was asked to talk about CEHIL's methods and means of knowing atrocity and responding to it, and among other issues, about creative methods of circumventing amnesties to allow prosecution of grave human rights violations. With this objective, I will start my presentation by explaining briefly CEHIL's work. CEHIL is the acronym of the Center for Justice and International Law. It's a non-governmental organization that was founded in 1991 by a group of prominent Latin American human rights defenders. Its mission is to contribute to the full enjoyment of human rights in the Americas through the effective use of the mechanisms of the Inter-American system of human rights and the international human rights law. Our work is focused mainly in the use of the mechanisms provided by the Inter-American Commission and Inter-American Court of Human Rights. To work toward its mission, CEHIL employs different intervention strategies. However, due to the topic of this discussion, I will concentrate only on one of them, that's the legal defense strategy. CEHIL provides free legal representation to victims of human rights violations before the Inter-American Commission and the Inter-American Court of Human Rights in closely cooperation with local partners. By doing this, we do not only aim to obtain adequate reparations for the victims of the specific case, but also to oblige the states to adopt more general measures to avoid the repetition of the same kind of violations. Currently, CEHIL is the non-governmental organization with more cases before the Inter-American Commission and the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. One of the main issues that we address with this strategy is precisely the gross human rights violations committed by state agents in the context of armed conflicts or military dictatorships of the past. As we all know, in the last 50 years, thousands of persons in Latin America were victims of gross human rights violations, such as torture, enforced disappearances, and extrajudicial executions. Most of these grave acts were left unpunished because of the complicity or the lack of capacity and willingness of the investigative and judicial authorities. At the same time, the truth about these facts remain hidden and the damage caused to the victims unrepaired. To this date, many years after the end of the mentioned conflicts and dictatorships, and when most of Latin American countries are ruled by democratically elected authorities, states have not dealt appropriately with this issue. However, the victims and their families have kept their fight for justice, truth and reparation through the years, and have kept looking for strategies to push their states to adopt measures on this respect. The victims we represent have a central role in all of our work. This core role is also reflected in the most recent reforms of the rules of procedure of the court and the commission that more and more see the victims as the protagonists of the international procedure. Consequently, when presenting a case to the court or the commission, we do it respecting the wishes of the victims. The reparations that we ask to the commission and the court try to make their voice heard. In our experience, the main claim of the victims of gross human rights violations and their families is and has always been justice. Regardless of the change of government or the position of the authorities in power, most of the victims that we have worked with maintain their claim for justice. Justice must include the determination of the responsible and that they are subject to adequate and effective punishment. This is even more important when the perpetrators are still public officers or hold positions of power. Many victims of gross human rights violations have declared before the Inter-American Court and commission the frustration and the impotence that they feel, knowing that those responsible for the violations of their rights or the rights of their families' members remain without punishment and in a position of advantage over them. In most cases, it has dealt with, the Inter-American Court has ordered states to initiate or continue effective investigation of gross human rights violations. These judgments are a valuable tool to push states to comply with their international obligations. As we all know, this is not a simple task. However, there are some success stories. For example, in the case of the massacre of Las Dos Torres of Guatemala, concerning the torture and extrajudicial execution of around 200 peasants by the Guatemalan military in 1982, the Supreme Court of Guatemala ordered, after a judgment of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, that the investigation of these facts had to be reopened. Since then, five of the perpetrators have been convicted for these heinous crimes. Also, in 2010, Peru's former president, Alberto Fujimori, was convicted for his responsibility in four cases regarding grave human rights violations. Among others, the massacres of Barrios Altos and La Cantuta. Both cases were also litigated by Sejil and its allies before the Inter-American Court. And as it was said yesterday, it was the first time in which a chief of state was convicted for crimes against humanity by a national tribunal. However, victims not only ask for the investigation and punishment of those responsible for the violation of human rights, they demand the determination and acknowledgement and dissemination of the truth of the facts. In relation to this topic, we must bear in mind the international recognition during the last decades of an autonomous right to the truth of the victim of gross human rights violations. In the words of one victim that survived the massacre of Almozote, where around 1,000 persons were killed by the military in El Salvador, in order to forgive the damage that we have suffered, we must know who and what we are forgiving. Another measure that is regularly ordered by the Inter-American Court that helps to achieve this goal is the publication of the judgment in a national newspaper or the production and distribution of videos or radio transmissions about the facts of the case. In many cases, the court has ordered the state to search the remains of disappeared persons, which, once complied, allows their families to bury them in accordance to their beliefs. This was possible in the case of the enforced disappearance of Juan Humberto Sánchez, who was abducted and killed by the military in Honduras. Finally, justice should be accompanied by the adoption of measures to repair the damage caused to the victims. This can include measures to acknowledge the dignity of the victims or to eliminate recognitions in favor of the perpetrators. For example, in the case of Eleodoro Portugal, related to the enforced disappearance of a leftist leader during the Panamanian dictatorship, the Inter-American Court ordered that a street had to be named after the victim. When this order was implemented, it was of great significance to his family. On the other hand, the court has historically ordered the adoption of broader reparations in order to prevent the repetition of similar violations. These measures include the enactment or derogation of legislation, the creation of education programs for state officials, the improvement of prison conditions, the creation of special investigative mechanisms, among others. One measure that the court has consistently ordered since its landmark case of Barrios Altos versus Peru, and that is particularly significant for the discussion that we are having, is the determination that amnesty laws are incompatible with the American Convention on Human Rights and therefore without legal effects. The implementation of this measure is complex. However, there are some success stories. After judgments of the Inter-American Court, both Peru and Uruguay adopted measures to assure amnesty laws in place wouldn't continue to be obstacles for the obtention of justice in human rights violation cases. In some circumstances, the mere litigation of the cases can and will provoke discussions that hopefully will contribute to the elimination of their effects. For example, in 2007, due to the celebration of a public hearing regarding the compliance of the Commission's recommendation in the case of the extrajudicial execution of Monsignor Oscar Arnulfo Romero in El Salvador, that included the derogation of the amnesty law, the state asked to be heard by the Commission so that they could justify why the said law had to stay in place. This consequently generated a discussion within El Salvador that had been avoided for many years. The controversy between the different positions regarding this issue came to light again with the international process related to the massacre of El Mozote before the Inter-American Court. In this occasion, the President of El Salvador recognized the state responsibility for the facts. Consequently, he was publicly criticized by many groups, including former members of the military. We are now waiting the court decision on the case, which will hopefully order the state to assure that the amnesty law will never again be an impediment to the investigation of the facts and the punishment of those responsible. I must conclude by saying that from our experience, the use of the Inter-American system of human rights has been an effective tool to push states to comply with its international obligations regarding grave human rights violations of the past. However, this is not enough. Litigation should be accompanied by a broader strategy that must involve different actors that through a joint effort can help the victims and the society to accomplish their final goals, justice, truth, and reparations. I finished with this one.